I'm Liam Printer, and this is The Motivated Classroom.
Hello, bonjour, Folcha, and welcome to The Motivated Classroom podcast. Thank you, everyone, for joining me. I feel like I'm often just in here talking on my own, but I'm hopeful there's people around the world listening to this, or that is at least what the stats tell me. There's over 140 different countries where this podcast is listened to, so that is just phenomenal. I can't really get my head around that, to be honest. And I've had so many lovely emails from people and messages about how the motivation is changing with their students and trying some of the things we're talking about. And just to remind everyone, the whole point of this is just to share a little bit of the research around motivation and language teaching and hopefully get us all talking, give us some ideas. And I'm learning loads from you guys as well in your emails and your links. So thank you so much. So Gura Mahagath to everybody. And today, of course, we start with our Irish phrase of the day, which for today is Cadhé Seo. Cadhé Seo means what is that? We've had the word cadh before, meaning what. Seo means that, and is. So Cadhé Seo, what is that? There you go. Oh, and by the way, thank you so much for all the interactions with last week's episode on grammar and how we teach grammar in a slightly different way, talking about patterns and making sure students see the fact that words change due to their grammar rather than really going at it with worksheets and fill the gap exercises and verb tables right from the beginning. There was loads of great comments on that. And, you know, I'm totally open to listening to other people about this as well and learning. And, you know, please again, remember, I'm not trying to say never, ever teach grammar. Not at all. I'm trying to say that there can be different ways to do it. And maybe if we focus on it less in years one and two, we can help to motivate our students a bit more. So it's about communication and talking. So yeah, thank you for all your comments on that. All right, so let's get straight into this. This is a question and answer episode, and I've had loads of questions this week. I'm really sorry. There's just no way that I'll be able to get to all of them, but I'll try and get through a few of them right now. So the first question comes in from Andrea on Instagram, and she goes by The Languages Teacher's Lair. And she asks, how do you prioritize? When you have little teaching time and loads of content to get through, how do you prioritize? Brilliant question, Andrea, and something I'm sure all the language teachers listening are thinking about the same thing. How do I make sure I'm teaching the right stuff, in inverted commas, or enough? Or how do I ensure they're getting to the exams with success? Or how do I ensure that they're getting proficient in their language? Absolutely, this is something we all kind of struggle with. I think the way I try and go about this in terms of prioritization is, for me, the goal in particular for year one and year two of their language learning journey is confidence, motivation, engagement, feeling like they can do it, that feeling of competence, the basic psychological need that self-determination theory tells us is necessary for motivation, which is competence, having a perception that we feel we can do it. I really think I concentrate most on that in year one and two. And I try and prioritize huge amounts of compelling, comprehensible input all the time, but especially in years one and two and three. Well, to be honest, all the time, but really at the beginning, that we are not prioritizing accuracy. That is not important for me in year one and year two, and even a bit of year three, to be honest. We start to get more into accurate stuff around that time, but I don't mind that they are making mistakes. I don't mind that they still are saying the wrong verb. And instead of saying I, for example, in Spanish, we say yo tengo, I have. And many students will say yo tiene, because they hear tiene a lot, which means he or she has. So essentially they're saying I, he or she has. And yes, while that is an issue that I want ironed out and corrected, and I'll focus on it more and more as time goes on, I don't really mind if that mistake is still there at the end of the year, as long as they're understanding everything. They feel like they're understanding everything. They feel like they can speak and they're able to have little conversations. They're able to talk to each other, put it into practice. They're enjoying the lesson. That for me is much more important. But how do I decide what is enough and how much should they know and what should they be able to do by year two? And what about all the content? So I think I'd like to deal with what they should be able to do, first of all. That's a big question. And if you look at certain textbooks, they tell us students should be able to do all of these things by the end of year one. It depends on your students. But really, for me, it's all about them being able to understand the language, listen to it, understand it, read it, enjoy it by the end of the year one. And they can talk about a variety of personal and everyday items, things that they're passionate about, and they can retell stories. But what I want at the end of the year is they feel really confident. They're like, they look back and go, wow, I can't believe I'm able to do all this in just 1 year. And that is the goal. And that is what the parents say to me when I hold meetings with them, which we did very recently. And almost all the parents are just blown away by what their children can do, because I don't mind that there's mistakes. I mean, they're listening to their children retell stories they've co-created, talk about invisible characters they built with the teacher. They're reading little novels at night. They're reading back their stories to their parents. They're able to talk about things that are passionate to them, about sports, about their classmates. They're able to do all these things. And yeah, okay, it might not be really accurate and perfectly correct all the time, but that's not really what's important to me. It's the enjoyment and love of learning the language. But what about content? When we have lots of content to get through, oh, I have to get through all these units. For me, that is one of the biggest killers and one of the things we absolutely need to change in education across the board. Just absolutely packing our units full of vocab and grammar they should know, in inverted commas. So who says what they should or shouldn't know? Who decides on what curriculum is and how much of it is there? For me, this is an enormous issue. And I guess we all work within systems and they tell us we have to do this amount of units and these vocab things by the end of the year, which is really frustrating. But what I do with that, Andrea, is I backwards plan that. So I work with colleagues here who maybe don't teach in the same way as me, but we have a similar final exam at the end of the year, halfway through the year, at the end of each unit. And so we look at those and we backwards plan. And I say, if the content is, I've got to get them talking about foods and ordering in the restaurants. This is a very common unit that we nearly all, everyone listening to this does at some time or another. Well, if that's the unit, okay, there's a variety of options I've got. I can get them to learn 200 or 300 food items off by heart with vocab lists, which will absolutely numb their motivation and they won't enjoy the class at all. And yes, they'll know how to say all these weird and wonderful food items that they will never need to use, because it just tells me that I have to do this in the book. And I've said this before, I teach Spanish. I'm a non-native speaker of Spanish. When I open a textbook and I see vocabulary words about food or the house or clothes or whatever that I don't even know, for me, that is just ridiculous. Then the students don't need to know that. Why are we teaching them something that I, as a language teacher and someone who has lived in the country and someone who has loads of friends who speak the language, who, if I as a teacher with all my experience don't know that obscure word, well, then they don't need to know that. They can learn it in Google Translate in a second. That is not important for my students in year one to learn that word off by heart. It's much more important that they can communicate with high frequency structures like I want, I can, I need, I have, I want it, I'm scared, I'm afraid. Those things are more important. The vocab they can find in 2 seconds on Google Translate or on Word Reference. And that's what I do as a non-native speaker. If I don't know the word for doorknob, I'll quickly look it up. But all the other structures I have allow me to put that into sentences. So we need to pare down the content, in my opinion, personally. It should be about structures and it should not be about huge vocab lists. And if it is, Andrea, and you're thinking, well, I've got all this vocab to cover, you need to talk to your colleagues and just say, do they really need to know 100 different food items at the end of this unit? Is that really necessary? Or is it better that they know 15 or 20 of the most common ones and they can go and find out how to say artichoke, or they can find out how to say cherry tomato if that's something they really like to eat and they want to talk about it themselves? That's fine. So I guess I would say, try and pare down the content. Take out a test that you used to do. Take out something and focus more on comprehensible input of structures that they need to communicate. That's how I go about having little teaching time with a lot of content. Think carefully, what is your content and is it necessary that they know this? A good example is when I first started teaching languages at the second level in the schools I worked in, I used to teach 6 units a year, 6 different kind of big vocab things. So one might have been the school, one might have been foods, one might have been traveling. And then I was just like, why am I doing this? Is ridiculous. So I just took it down to 4. And now it's so much more manageable. I just got rid of 2. And now you're thinking, oh, but then they won't learn about the school, or they won't. Yes, they do, in normal conversation, and it comes up in our stories and it comes up when they want to speak about it. Then a class will start talking about food items if that's what they want to talk about. but we don't have a whole unit around it. Just think carefully about your units. And I would look at can-do statements at the end of the year. Can the student read a text and understand it? Can they, you know, communicate in a way that is authentic to them and it's about their own passions and interests? Can they use the high frequency structures like I have, I want, I need, they wanted, she forgot, we went? Can they use those? And the vocab you can fill in later. So I hope that goes some way to explain that about content and teaching time. Now, the second question comes in from Tamar Rulse. I hope I've pronounced that right, Tamar. And the question is, how do you cope with colleagues who are just not open to comprehensible input or teaching proficiency with storytelling? How do you cope with that? Teachers who are really reluctant, and it gets very tiring when you're the only one doing it and there's no support. And Tamar, I'm 100% with you. It is really hard. It is difficult. It is about that professional identity I spoke to on one of the episodes recently with Dr. Ed Stevens. Go back and listen to it. It's a great episode. And that kind of tension about our professional identity, if no one else is doing this in my department, but I believe in it, it starts to really grate on you and you think, I've no support, there's no one else helping me, I've no one to talk to about it. It can be really difficult. If you really believe in it and you really want to do it, then my encouragement for you would be to just keep going, but to go slowly and bit by bit. Don't go in there all guns blazing and being like, I have the answer. I know how to change the world. I am going to make your classes more motivating. Just listen to me and teach with CI. I've quickly learned that that's just not the way to do it. I think you need to go in little by little, slowly, slowly, and allow the students and their joy and their love of your classes to start to speak volumes. The teachers will quickly start to hear about your classes if the students are really enjoying them and they feel like they're getting on well and the parents are thinking they're doing well and they're achieving well in their exams. Then they'll kind of want to know a bit more. Another good idea to do with this is to try and present in little snippets just one tactic for comprehensible input at your department meetings. So we call them sharing best practice in our school. We do kind of once a month in our department meetings. And rather than go in and do a 40-minute presentation on this is why CI is important and this is why we all need to do it, just teach one aspect of it that you like and say, oh, this is something that I've heard about. It's called movie talk, or it's called picture talk, or it's called the special person interview, and it really works for me. The students really enjoy it. They get a huge amount of comprehensible input and they're able to do much more with the language, and talk about it, and then maybe show them some examples of what the students can do. So show them some of their writing, show them some of maybe their speaking exam when they talk about this. And then gradually you'll get students to come along with you. And all you need really is that one other colleague who has a little bit of interest and says, oh, that was quite interesting. Then you take that colleague aside, you speak to them and say, yeah, do you want to collaborate a bit on this? Or you could maybe come and observe me and I'll go and have a look at one of your classes and maybe let's look at this video together. And I would just go in slowly, slowly. And even though you feel like you're kind of on your own right now, other teachers will start to hear about your classes being more motivating and engaging, and they may want to pop their heads in and see what's going on. So I would just say, don't be too disheartened. Do what you firmly believe in. And if they're not open to comprehensible input and teaching with stories, which some teachers are not, and that's okay. If they're not willing to teach with TPRS with stories, it can be a bit daunting and it can be a bit scary to do something totally out of your comfort zone that you've never done before. So give it time, and I would always say start with one or two small areas of comprehensible input that are a bit easier to start with than the stories, which for me would be things like the movie talk, picture talk, special person interview, those type of things, or building an invisible character. I think that's easier for other teachers to try out. And all you can do is encourage and hope that maybe they'll come and observe you, maybe encourage them to observe you, maybe encourage them to talk to your students, and then just go with that. And as I say, you just need that one other colleague. Once two of you are doing it, then other people hear about it, then three of you start with it, and now you'll have the majority, or you'll start to have enough there, that critical mass, when the whole department starts to look at this and go, wow, this is really cool. Let's think about this a bit more. So yeah, be patient and hang on in there. Now, the third question comes in from Kayla Dawn on Instagram. And she asks, what do you do when you don't think you're creative enough to come up with spontaneous and creative stories? This is a great question, Kayla. And I think lots of teachers listening to this who've never tried teaching proficiency with reading and storytelling, TPRS, or just a narrative approach, a storytelling approach, whatever that means to you, if that's story listening. A lot of teachers are probably thinking the same thing. Oh, I'd love to do this, but how do you come up with these stories that are so engaging and so compelling for the students? And I suppose I would just say you have to beg, borrow and steal them, essentially. You find them online, you talk to other people, you adapt their stories. You've hopefully heard me talk about one or two, and maybe try that one in your class about Brad Pitt and the mustache made of pencil, or the twin sisters who their mum wants them to be the best, or, you know, her dad wants her to be the best and they're really jealous and they go to a fortune teller to see who's going to have the better life, and then that's all in the future. Now, I didn't just come up with that. That took time and it took me reading loads of other people's stories. So one of the books that I bought is called Look, I Can Talk, and it comes with all these tiny little stories. There's Look, I Can Talk, Look, I Can Talk More, and they're actually written, I think, by the person who founded TPRS, which is Blaine Ray. Now, you may not like all these stories. You may get them and think, oh, these really aren't for me, but it'll give you some ideas. So like I just sometimes flick through that and I'll read a few of the stories and go, oh yeah, that's kind of a cool, I could adapt that one. So there's one, you know, that I read the other day. It's about, you know, a tiger who plays volleyball, but he always answers his phone in the middle of the volleyball court and his teammates get really annoyed with him. And the whole thing is about, you know, answering the phone and saying, yeah, hello, and all this, and his team are getting so annoyed. And so that's, you know, that came from one of the stories in that book and I just kind of adapted it. There's another one called Trip Scripts, hard to say, T-R-I-P-P. It's written by a guy called Jim Tripp and he has a book of story scripts. And also if you just type into Google, TPRS story scripts, lots of people have put them out there. I recommend Martina Bay, Bay spelled B-E-X. And I always wonder, am I saying this right? But Martina, if you're listening, in Switzerland, there's a town called Bay and it's spelled B-E-X. So if you pronounce your name Martina Bex, I apologise, but I can't help but say it the Swiss way. So Martina Bex, Martina Bay, she has a website called The Comprehensible Classroom and she publishes some stories for free on there and I've used some of her stories. They're great. Just Google it and you'll find some of these scripts and then adapt them. What ones might work for you? And you'll see that once you do your first few stories, your own stories will become really funny and great because of the students. They'll mix things around and give you new ideas and change things up. You have your skeleton script of what is going to happen. And again, just think that most stories are simply, there's a character, they have a problem. They need the problem to be resolved. They go somewhere, doesn't get resolved. They go somewhere else, doesn't get resolved. They go somewhere, it gets resolved. That's typically how stories work and try and adapt it in a different way. So that when I talked about the twins going to the fortune tellers, you know, they go to one fortune teller. He gives them this crazy story of their future when they're going to have all these weird things happen to them. They say, no, I don't like that. They go to another fortune teller. It's the total opposite. It's super boring. It's a future where nothing happens. You will be really bored. You will have one cat and you will talk to your cat every morning and you do it in a monotonous voice and they don't like that. They finally go to their last fortune teller and woohoo, their problem is resolved. They get to find out that their life will be brilliant, but it's going to cost them loads of money to find out the ultra extra secret at the end. But they say no, because I want my future to be mysterious. And again, that just doesn't come to my head. It comes to me thinking about it and writing my script out in advance. And it takes time at the beginning, but don't try and reinvent the wheel. Look up those books. Look, I Can Talk. Jim Tripp and his scripts, Martina Bex or Martina Bay, whichever you prefer, from Comprehensible Classroom. I should just ask Martina what she prefers. Martina, please let me know if it's Bex or Bay. I'm going to say Bay because that is the Swiss town. Ah, there you go. I always get off on little tangents on these. I hope you're still with me. But basically, I don't just make these up off the top of my head. I wish I was that creative and wonderful that I could do that. These stories come from me reading other people's TPRS stories, from me watching people on YouTube with a TPRS story. Adriana Ramirez, her channel is great. You've got Alice Ayel for French, who does more like story listening, but you can adapt some of her stories. Or you go with classic stories like Cinderella or these type stories and you adapt them for a modern kind of take on it. So you have the same type story and the students will recognize it, but it's with students from your class, for example. So these are just some ideas, but I don't just come up with these. I wish I could. It's from reading other people's stories and adapting them. So that's my recommendation. All right, it looks like we might have time for one quick final question. I don't think I ever get to four questions. So there you go. Question four. how do I get my students to speak more in the target language? Oh, and this was combined actually. That was from Laura M. Gardner on Instagram. And then someone else asked, can you give me some tips for supporting students with very low confidence and self-esteem? And that was from Catherine T7 on Instagram. So putting these together, this is essentially all about competence and confidence. How do we get our students to be more confident so that they feel willing to output and give it a go in the classroom? This is not easy, but it comes from culture, as in you have to build a culture of confidence and competence in your class from day one. It's not something that will change overnight. I did a whole episode on competence right at the beginning of the series of the podcast, so have a listen to that one first and foremost. But some quick tips are, I do use cold calling in my class. Now, cold calling for me is an awful name for that because it sounds really mean that you're just picking on a student. And I don't do it like that. So I have these little cups at the front of my class and students have written their name on a little stick. And I just pull those out so it's random. But of course, I'm very careful. When I pull it out, I know the student's name. I see the student's name and I go, okay, I know this student and I'm going to have to give this student a really easy yes or no question. Or, I know this student, I need to give this student a really challenging, open-ended question. So you adapt your question based on the student to build their competence. So that student who's low in confidence, you pull out their name, or even you just call on them, or you pretend that their name has come out. The students can't see what name has come out because I quickly put it back in. Sorry if students are listening, there are these little teacher things we do. And if you see, okay, that student, let's call the student Michael, is really struggling with confidence. How do I help him out? Well, I'm going to give him a question that I know he can definitely answer. I know he can answer this. And it'll be a simple yes or no question, or it'll be, you know, I'll give him two options. Was it four men or three men who walked into the stadium in our story? And then he'll say, it was four. And even if he gets it wrong, he'll be like, oh, you're thinking of four when we were talking about four previously in the story. Oh, no, it's three actually, but I know where you're coming from with the four. And now that they still feel confident, now I'll try again with something else. Or maybe I'll make sure they're listening to me for another part, go back to them. And then when they do give me the right answer, I'll say, oh, yes, exactly. That's really good. And that shows you're listening like a linguist. So it's all these little things that you're trying to say, little things like thank you and oh, I can see that you're listening. That is a really nice sentence. You're clearly listening in the class. Those two sentences can really help with a student who's low in confidence. Now, another sentence that I've noticed that really helps students low in confidence when they're not maybe willing to participate much is quite simply say, oh, nice use of the language, nice intonation or nice accent or nice pronunciation. Students really like that. Then you go, oh, that was really nice. Nice pronunciation, nice intonation there. That was good. And then you move on to the next student and that will help to build their confidence. So a lot of building competence is in the language that you use, but a huge amount of building competence and confidence. Again, this isn't something that you're going to do in one class and suddenly that student is really confident. It takes time and it takes effort. So what you need to do is really make sure that you are doing stuff that is of interest to that student. So maybe you do a special person interview with that student and then everyone is learning about them. They're using language that you're really helping them with a comprehensible input. They're just responding with one word answers and you're helping them there. And they feel like very confident from that. And they'll feel confident from the students learning about them. They'll feel like they matter. They feel like they're important. So that's one really important thing. But also making sure that your tasks are not so difficult and so challenging and so scary that that student is going to not do well and then their competence is completely ruined forever. So you want to think carefully about the tasks and the way you're setting them up so that they can be successful to a certain degree. Now, that doesn't mean that you just always differentiate and you're giving them like a really easy paper and everyone else does a difficult one, because the research would show us that that actually isn't very helpful. But what is helpful to a student is the language that we use and giving them comment only feedback. So a student does something for you and it's not very good. Don't give them a mark or a grade on that one. Just give them comment only feedback. And then the next time, maybe give them a grade when maybe they do a little bit better, if you're able to do that, if you're in a system that allows you to do that. But I recommend you go back, listen to the episode on competence, and hopefully that will tell you some more strategies about raising confidence. It takes time. your language that you use, and making sure tasks are challenging but not high risk for that student is really important. Oh, wow, we're at 25 minutes. I'm sorry I didn't get to more. There were great questions about how to motivate yourself and students at the end of the year. So go back and listen to episode one for that one. Linking TPRS to the curriculum, how on earth do we do that? I'm going to talk a little bit more about that in the coming weeks. Other people were asking about active learning strategies. There was a great question from Esther who was asking, you know, what other ways can I get the students really engaged for those little 10 minutes in the class? And Esther, I think, was the very first patron of the podcast. So definitely going to answer that one for Esther in a whole episode on active learning strategies. And that is going to come next week. Strategies I use in the class to get students out of their seats, but learning. Not strategies that are simply there to get them moving and there's no learning going on. Strategies that get them up, moving, are active, but there is learning happening and it improves their motivation, improves their engagement. And it was Chris Bradseth Christiansen on Instagram who asked about this too, about sponge activities, things they really like and you can use in quick 10 minutes when you're struggling with something to do, kind of starters and plenaries. So I will cover that in a whole episode next week. Thank you so much, Gura Mahagath, especially to the patrons of the podcast. You are keeping this going. If you feel like you want to support the podcast and get me a coffee or a bag of crisps once a month, please do go ahead and look up patreon.com, The Motivated Classroom. I really appreciate it. Gura Mahagath, don't forget the Irish phrase for today, which was, of course, I'm having to look at it myself, Cad é seo. What is that? Gura Mahagath, agus slán a bhaile.
The Motivated Classroom podcast is an original production by Liam Printer. I'm at Liam Printer on Twitter, and my YouTube channel is Liam Printer, The Motivated Classroom. Full podcast notes with links to resources are available on my website, liamprinter.com. For more, find and follow The Motivated Classroom podcast on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Graphics and music are provided by Paul Mahan. Intro clips are thanks to the wonderful multilingual staff at the International School of Lausanne.